Where is my clubhouse?
How long do I have to answer this? If I start with, for my life, I've had a bit of trauma when I was young. I don't think the family would have got through it if it weren't for the clubhouse.
And then these people act as like the scaffolding of security. We all do act as that for each other, I hope.
The clubhouse is just the environment, not necessarily a place.
What's lovely about that little WhatsApp group is that we can share, you know, stories, we can share things that make us laugh, you know, frustrations.
It's like being around people that are going through similar things or that just understand and are just there as like a bit of a shoulder to cry on or someone to like pick you up.
Like my family, the people who support me, my wife and my twin daughters. Like my wife's unbelievable for me.
Hello and welcome to the Where's Your Clubhouse podcast, brought to you by Speakeasy Club. Now, my name's Simon Clark. I'm founder of Speakeasy and also host for this very first series, and I am super excited. Now, the Where's Your Clubhouse podcast, we sit down with some incredible people, predominantly involved in the world of sport. We talk through their life stories, really. We talk about the good, the bad and the ugly. And we ask everybody that one question. Where's your clubhouse? Where's that one place for you that you can be the best version of you? You can not feel judged. You can just feel happy and you have a bloody good time whilst doing it. It's incredible to hear some of the responses, and it's a question I don't think we really spend a lot of time asking ourselves, really. So I can't wait to share some of the responses. Now, we couldn't be here without a brilliant, brilliant partner in Mentality Clothing. I'm so excited to join up with two young lads who are sharing a passion, creating a community, investing finances back into a brilliant charity in Mind Cymru. But they developed this incredible clothing line, which is cool, it's fun, it's accessible. They do big sizes for big chaps like myself. And they are just two really, really good guys trying to give back to the community. So we're delighted to offer Speakeasy 15% off. Check out their website, www.mentalityclothing.co.uk. Honestly, there's some really cool stuff on there, so please do check it out. Now, before I get into it, please, it's so important that we get your feedback on these things. Who do you want to see? How do these conversations go? Is there anything that lands with you guys? That's where we want to be, and try and pull out some of the tricky stuff as well. And hopefully there's some really relatable bits in there too. We'd love to hear from you. Please leave a review. Please leave a comment. Please share it with your friends and family. And we'd love to hear your feedback. You can follow us on all good social media platforms and some rubbish ones at Speakeasy Club 1. Now, let's get into the latest episode. Without further ado, sit back, relax, and let's find out where's your clubhouse. Gwen Proud, thank you so much for joining us this evening. Really appreciate your time.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. Not at all. We're really looking forward to this. We've kind of connected recently on a few bits, and I've just been really interested in your career, your journey and your story where you are now, because there's a lot of good stuff in there, but also a lot of challenge and a lot of adversity that you've overcome and overcoming. So I've been really, really inspired by it. So let's take it all the way back to the beginning. Tell us where you grew up, what was it like, and where did it all start for you?
Okay, we might open a can of worms here, so if I speak for too long, let me know. So I'm from Swansea originally, so I grew up there. I have always been very sporty since I can remember, really. Going through primary school, all I remember is getting involved in as many sports as I could. Very competitive, not even just in sport, just in day-to-day life, to be honest, which was sometimes a downfall. But moving from primary school where I was kind of like the big fish in a little pond. Then moving into secondary school, I struggled a little bit with fitting in and sort of with being picked on and things, because I've always kind of been, it's weird because I've always been the way I am now, but now I'm celebrated for being that way. Whereas when I was younger, maybe I wasn't, in the sense that I was very different. I did what I wanted to do and I wasn't really conscious of people viewing the way I did things as odd, if that makes sense. And especially for that first couple of years in secondary school, like I was just in my own little bubble. And it wasn't until I grew up, people didn't like me or were picking on me. And then that sort of had a negative effect on my confidence. But sport has been huge in that. I'm just kind of doing like a whistle stop tour. But yeah, sport has played such a huge role in my life in terms of me being able to regain that confidence that I had when I was younger and I was going through school.
I'm really interested, like the comment you made there about you've always been you and you've never changed. It's been other people's perceptions of you or how other people have viewed you has been the thing that's changed. Are you happy to talk a little bit more about that? Like how did that come about and what did that feel like at the time?
Yeah, I think the first time I really started to notice it was when I was in school, sort of year seven, year eight, I just loved learning. I loved like embracing everything. And as soon as I found something interesting, that was like me sold. And I was like, I'm giving 100% to this. And it's weird because I wasn't so much like that in primary school. And I don't know if it was a change of environment that sort of made me go down more of that route. But obviously you can imagine a kid who's kind of like a teacher's pet and just wants to do the homework. There was times where I was literally like, oh, we had homework today. So I was like so proud of it. It wasn't me being trying to dob people in. I was like, I'm proud of my homework. So I want you to know that I've done it. And I just always loved doing that. But unfortunately, kids can be pretty mean. And for a long time, my attitude being that way meant that people picked on me and people didn't like me for it. And it was a case of there was always a reason for people to pick on me. And yeah, it was pretty hard. But at the same time, I think I was quite dissociated from it. And looking back, it actually did affect me quite a lot. But at the time, I think I was just like, I didn't understand why other people didn't like me, to be honest. I think I was just caught up in my own little world. But as I grew a little bit older, I think you grow in a little bit of self-awareness. And I had, to be honest, I had a group of friends from like year seven till year nine. And those same group of friends told me in year 10, oh, we actually didn't really like you that much in year seven, year eight. And I was like, what? And they were like, you were a bit weird. And I was like, oh, right. And then that started turning cogs and stuff. And then I was like, right, okay, maybe I don't fit in. And then that's where at that sort of age as a girl, when you're 15, like 14, 15, body image plays a role as well. I was going through like transitions. I lost a bit of weight. And then I just sort of lost a bit of that confidence that I've always had. And now it's probably taken me 8 years throughout my rugby career to build that confidence back up to where it was, if not higher than where it was.
Listening to you there, I mean, it's remarkable hearing those challenges and the way that you were treated. And I'm sure there's plenty more within that as well. But at the same time, then hearing how confident you are talking about it and how clearly confident you are in yourself now to your last point there around, you know, over the last 8 years, you've had to work really, really hard. During that sort of year eight, year nine period, like you said, were you playing sport then? Were you into your rugby then?
Yeah, I actually hadn't started playing rugby at that point. I was playing football. I loved football, played since I was like 3 or 4 years old, pretty much as soon as I could walk. I was kicking a football around. I just wanted to be like my dad and he played football. So I followed him. But I was like literally doing every sport possible. And I think that was one of the reasons that people, you know, and your parents always say to you, oh, they're jealous. And you're like, no, they're not. But actually they probably were a little bit, because I just had like a bit of a, not a natural talent, but like I was averagely good at most sports that I did. But a lot of that came from trying really hard. Like I would really try hard because I just wanted to impress the PE department and I wanted to impress people with authority. I didn't really care about, you know, my mates or the bullies or whatever. Like I was just like, I just want to look really good to the PE department. Do you know what I mean? And yeah, I just tried really, really hard. And then as soon as I turned, I think I was like 14, 15, as soon as I tried rugby, I literally was like, where's this sport been all my life? I love it. Fell in love with the game, tried playing football and rugby and sort of a couple of athletic bits like on the side. It didn't really work because rugby's a pretty tough sport on the body. So I just chose then after about a year to just concentrate on rugby, and I haven't really looked back since, to be honest. And it's hard to try and summarize like 7 or 8 years of rugby career and like how I've changed as a person in terms of confidence and that kind of thing. To try and summarize that is pretty difficult because there was loads of different stages. There was like, obviously, and it's not linear, it's like up and down. There was definitely setbacks. There was things that made me stronger, things that made me weaker. It's like, but it's just like that general growth. Like if you were to look at it on a graph, that's how I would try and describe it really.
That kind of self-reliance really in you developing that and that self-awareness and ultimately going, well, whether they like me or not, I'm the one here who's going to sail my own ship, so to speak.
Yeah, that's a big thing that I've learned. Like, again, hindsight is a brilliant thing because now I can use all of the experiences that I've had in my last 24 years of life and it summarize it into that, like, you're the only person that's literally there through every day of your life. Like you're always there in your mind. So what I've learned to realize is that you shouldn't let other people's actions, thoughts, comments, anything influence the way that you view yourself. Because I think as a society, that's probably something that we're really bad at. Like if someone thinks something about me or says something about me, I try not to let that then change my own view of myself because that's really important. And I've been having a lot of conversations with friends recently about self-talk and the way that we speak to ourselves and how different that is to the way that we want to speak to our friends. So whenever you say something to yourself, whether that be, oh, I'm not good enough to do this or I'm going to fail at this, like, would you say that to your best mate? No, you wouldn't. So why are you saying it to yourself? I mean, try and think of things that way. And it's much easier said than done, but I think there's a starting point and you've got to start there. Otherwise you spiral into this sort of negative self-image.
I was just fascinated listening to you there around all that. I mean, what you're right. It very much is a lot easier said than done. But at the same time, it's hearing the words and hearing those affirmations that you're going through there. I totally get it. The bit you mentioned earlier as well around change of environment. Do you feel how important is the right environment for you right now at the stage of life you're at?
I think it's crucial. Like it's one of those things where it's like, have you heard the term, I'm going to butcher this completely, but it's like if you try to get a fish to walk on land, like it would obviously fail compared to an animal that can walk on land. But if you try to get a fish to swim in the sea and then you try to get a land animal to do the same, it's like contradictory. And I think that sums up the importance of environment and where you are for your skill sets and where you can flourish and where you can grow. And to a certain extent, when you're in school, you actually can't control your environment, and that's hard. And for some kids, that's fine because they fit in and they go off onto this trajectory, and that's fine. But for other kids, you don't fit in. The way that you learn, like the way that they learn traditionally in schools, might not be the way that you like to learn. And it's hard then to actually grow in that environment. Like you said, like you have to surround yourself with the right tools and the right people to allow your skill set to grow and to flourish. And I think that's probably where being around in elite sport for me is like allowed my skill set. And you know, like my job is physical, and that's great for me because that's how I can express my talent and my energy. And it makes me think, like, if I had not discovered rugby and then ended up in a 9-to-5 job, or, you know, at one point in before sixth form, I wanted to go to med school because I thought that's what everyone did and that was a good job. Right. If I'd end up going down that route, like, I would be bored out of my mind. Like, but it's just crazy that some people, sometimes you can get stuck in that trap of going down into the wrong environment, and no wonder then you feel like you aren't flourishing or that you aren't succeeding to your full potential because your environment's completely wrong.
Couldn't agree more with that. Yeah, definitely. I think the strain on your body in the medical world will have been very, very different, but very similar same time. So tell us about that environment then, that first rugby environment. You use the phrase, you know, you kind of that question, where have you been all my life? Mm-hmm. You know, so what was it when you got in there, you picked up that rugby board and you thought, right, this is a bit of me, this is.
I think like just having the space to express yourself a little bit. Like I'd felt for a lot of years playing football that I was often under pressure. Like I was in goals. So I often used to put like that self-talk was pretty bad for me at that point. Like I used to put so much pressure on myself. I used to be like, oh, you're not good enough. You're not going to save. Like that's a lot of pressure for one individual. And I think as soon as I stepped into a new environment, into that rugby environment, I've got no pressure on myself. It was almost like I had the space to create like a new identity, I suppose. And like people don't know me. People like I'm brand new here. There's no pressure. And I just absolutely loved it. I had that space to express myself and to grow. Contact, I loved that because it was something that I'd maybe been shouted at for as a goalkeeper, making contact. you get a red card for that. But actually it was celebrated. And that's where those cogs started to turn for me in terms of a self-confidence and a body image side of things. Like my body was doing these like crazy things that I'd never even thought it could do. And that helped to slowly start to turn some cogs in growing in confidence as a person as well.
Amazing. What was the journey like then? So you got involved 15, 16. Was that in school or was that local club?
So it was actually outside of school. It was in like a local, like a development centre. So it was a regional development centre, the Ospreys. But I'd gone along with one of the girls I was in school with who also plays for Wales now. So it's like a nice little story that we've, you know, gone through it together. She was like, oh, come along. I played football with her too. She had come along, try it out. And yeah, like it was the best thing that could have happened. And it makes me happy now that there's so many more opportunities for young girls within school and outside of school. Like that was probably one of the only opportunities I would have had to start rugby because it wasn't something that they were like, today in PE we're doing rugby. Like that didn't happen. It was like, girls, you're doing rounders, boys, you're doing football and rugby and whatever. So it does make me happy now to see that those opportunities are growing and that are both inside and outside of school. So it's more accessible.
Definitely. And I'm really interested to, we'll talk a little bit more about the here and now and that elite side of sport you've talked about as well. But just again, just to give us an idea of, and it's only what, sort of 6-7 years ago, really, that you're involved with a regional rugby side. Yeah. What sort of facilities, opportunities were there for you at that time? Was it still a bit of a slog or did you feel part of something?
I definitely felt part of something, and it was the first time that I started having a bit of exposure to like strength and conditioning stuff as well. So we were pretty lucky actually, because I think we were one of the only regions that had an S&C coach on board with us. And in the facility in Llandarcy Academy of Sport, we were training, there was like a good S&C set up with the gym and stuff. So to start having that early exposure and being taught like, okay, if you do this in the gym and grow and become more powerful and stronger in the gym, this transfers across to your sport, which basically sparked interest in strength and conditioning, which is like sent me down a whole path of a degree and everything on that side of stuff. But yeah, I think considering things, how much better things are now in terms of the setup, we were pretty lucky in that Osprey setup to have the facilities and that kind of thing that we did.
Fantastic. And how did that kind of, did you need any more motivation then to think there could be a bit of a career in this for me? Or at that time, was it still, I'm just enjoying it. We don't really know what's going to happen in the wider game. Let's just enjoy my rugby and who knows what the future holds.
Yeah, I think it was more a case of the latter. It was like, I don't know if it wasn't that I never saw a career in rugby, but at the time it wasn't a thing. So it was like, this is something that we all do. I pretty early on knew that I wanted to represent Wales because that's always been something that I've wanted to do in sport, full stop. like ever since I was young, I always wanted to get to the highest point that I possibly could in whatever sport that was that I ended up doing. So for me, that was the focus, but it was also more a case of like, at this point when I was just training once a week, every Monday, it was like, I just can't wait for Monday again. And then Monday would come and I would just like love it. And then I'd be so sad when training would be over. I'd be like, oh, can we just do a little bit more? but I think it was because I saw myself improving week on week. And realistically, that's how motivation works. Like, you might not feel particularly motivated to do something in the first place because you're not very good at it and no one likes being bad at things. But as soon as you start to see improvements in both yourself, like emotionally, mentally, that side of things, but also physically, and you can see yourself growing in the game, like that's a motivation itself to be like, oh, okay, I can still work in, and you keep going. And yeah, it was, like I said, it wasn't really looking ahead to a career. It was more a case of just taking it week by week and just loving it, really, and just trying to play wherever I could.
But with all that in mind, do you remember a particular time, or was there a particular moment where you thought, I'm doing all right at this, and actually you thought, I'm a bit better than some of those around me, and this is going quite well? Was there a particular moment, or was it, again, just building on that consistency you talk about?
Yeah, that's a good question, actually, because at the time I probably suffered with a little bit of imposter syndrome. Like, I've always struggled that on and off, but I think it was more a case of like feeling like it was almost a little bit of a fluke. Like, I was like, it's odd. Like, it was that disconnect between being confident but also being like, how have I ended up in, like, for example, the Wales under 18 setup. I was like, how am I here? I just started playing like a year and a half ago, and there's girls that have been playing since they were like three, and I'm like, how? And then I think because I had gaps in knowledge in the game, I was like, I actually don't understand what the referee's just given away that pen for. So
okay.
So it was like it was very much a learning experience for me. And looking back, I did a lot. I watched a lot of rugby. I watched people in my position. Like, I was learning all the time, but that sort of learning and growth lags a little bit. So for a while I was like, actually, I have no idea what's going on. Like, how did I get here? And it was, yeah, it was quite odd, but it was definitely something that grew. And I think it was probably when I was 17, I got selected into the World Cup 2017 training squad. And I remember being on the bus on the way back from an under-18s like Welsh schools tournament. And I had this email, and I was literally sat on the bus, and I couldn't tell anyone because it was like secret for like another week. And I was just like, I actually can't believe this has happened. Like, I've been brought into the senior Welsh squad after playing for 2 years. Like, it was just, it was like scary, but also like, you get butterflies and you're like, I can't believe this is happening. Like, this is crazy. And yeah, that was like basically the start of my like senior international career, I suppose. So yeah.
So that's how much would you know, you talk about maybe gaps in the knowledge around the game and the laws and some of that sort of stuff. How much do you put your mindset down to kind of elevating you to that level at such a young age? Clearly you've got that curiosity, you've got that passion and that physicality, that's there. But if you're missing that kind of technical knowledge at points, how much was that mindset of yours an advantage, do you think?
Yeah, I think it was a huge advantage, because even if I didn't particularly know what was going on, I would always try my hardest. Like, I was always, what we call now in the Welsh setup is TNT, so it takes no talent. So that's the kind of things like working off the ball, getting around the corner, making that tackle. I always had that, even if I didn't particularly know if the way I was tackling was right. I was always there and I was trying to make the tackle. So I think that's something that you can't necessarily coach. Like, it's a lot of heart. It's like, you either have the desire to try as hard as you can and to want to improve. And like, where I had gaps in my knowledge, it wasn't like I wasn't trying to learn, you know? So it was always just kind of like trusting that process that I was on my way to learning and understanding the game more. And, you know, it's a complex game that takes years to, you know, you're never going to really master it. So it was just that, like I mentioned before, I really enjoy learning. So having that to put my mind to and to try and progress week on week, like, that was exciting for me. Like, I don't like to be bored. So to have a game that had so many laws that I had no idea about, I was like, oh, this is the minefield. Like, for ages. You know?
Hey, listen, I haven't got a clue. I mean, I have not got a clue. Like, I think one kicks it with their foot and the other one throws it with their hands. That's yeah. about as technical as I get. So there's no judgment there, not at all. What was that like then? So you talked about being called up to the training squad, you know, but what was it like to be to get that call up to be a full member of the Wales squad? And maybe I'll say this with no experience, and please tell me if this is wrong, but representing your country at any level, unbelievable. Like, that must be a great feeling to wear the feathers on your chest. But to get the call at the senior squad, then that's another level above, isn't it? What was that like when that came around?
Yeah, it was just scary, if I'm honest. And I was like, right, okay. Like, very intimidating going in as a little 17-year-old going into like a senior squad setup with like, there was like a squad of 40 girls. Most of them were like 25 plus. Like, there was a couple of us young ones that like the girls that are still there now. And it was like, just intimidating it was proper old school rugby vibes where it was like, okay. This is the authority. You're the young ones. Like, and I remember we had a forwards coach, and he just used to do this drill where two people would be working in the middle, and like there'd be people on the pads on the outside. Like, one person had to lie on a sausage pad, and basically the drill was just absolutely leather each other. And I just remember my first time lying on that pad, and someone just coming and wiping me out, and I was like, "Oh my god!" Like, welcome to senior. Because I've not played against anyone older than 18, and then I've got right. someone who's 42 and has got 50 caps for Wales, just like ending me. It was just a bit of an experience, and I think it's so hard to go back to that time because a lot of it is like gone out of my memory now, but I always remember that and it was nice that a lot of the senior girls were quite welcoming, and they were always like trying to help me out, giving me tips and that kind of thing. And again, I was pretty keen to learn, so I was always like keeping my eyes open for any like positive influences from the older girls as well.
Yeah, I'm interested in just exploring that a bit more, because the evolution of Gwen Crabb as an individual, you know, that's quite clear and that's fascinating, and there's a bit more to that I'd love to explore a bit. But the evolution of Gwen Crabb as a rugby player, you know, talk us through that a little bit. What comes to mind when you talk about that journey? You talked about the graph earlier, the peaks and the troughs, and of course playing for Gloucester now as well.
Yeah.
So another step up at another level, and just what does that evolution look like for you as a rugby player?
I think it was a case of like, for a lot of my career, it was always feeling like I could do more. So it was like whenever I'd come off the pitch, it was like, all right, that was okay, but I did this, not that I did it wrong, but it was like, this is a work on. And when you're at like the top end of the game where you're in an international setup, that is very much the way that coaches speak to you, because it comes back to the, like, you learn more from your mistakes than you do from succeeding. So it's, and when you're at the top of the game, it's like, you know, when you've done something right, like if I've made a good carry and it's taken three people to tackle me, I obviously know that that's a good thing. So I don't need the coach to sit down and be like, that was class, well done, because I know that intrinsically that is good. So it's like, but also in your head, you have the, right, okay, there was that tackle that I missed, if I just get my foot in closer. And then you have the coaches also telling you, if you step that foot, and you're like, yeah, I know. But like, so it's just like that reinforcement of things to work on all the time. And I think that was big in my first couple, like probably season or two at an international level. We have also missed out my first ACL injury, but that's a whole different
point. Yeah.
But like those first couple of games, like at international level, it's kind of just like going with the flow. It was just like, I've been chucked in at the deep end. I'm not entirely sure if I'm going to sink or swim, but we're just going to go with it. And there was a lot of learnings along the way. There was obviously things that I did wrong. There was mistakes, but it was just a case of reviewing it every week, trying to be better the next game. Like, it was just a bit of a whirlwind, to be honest. That, like, I think I was 19 when I got my first cap. I just turned 19. And then basically for about 20 odd games, I started every game pretty much. So it was just like, but obviously game 3 to game 20 were very different in the way I was playing. Not only like physically, I was a lot bigger by game 20 than I was on game 3, but also just like that absolute repetition of training, playing, learning, growing, and so on and so forth.
Absolutely. Mm. I mean, you mentioned it there, and I was going to, it does lead us on nicely. Maybe nicely isn't necessarily the right word, but you clearly, that culture of curiosity that you create around you, not just for you yourself, learning, that commitment. And when it gets a bit tough, you know, there's clearly that dogged determination in you as well. So we have to say the first ACL injury, sadly. But yeah, talk about that. Tell us through how it happened. What did it look like? And then ultimately, how were you able to reframe that mindset of yours to go again, for so to speak?
Yeah, so my first ACL, it happened. I got my first start for Wales. It was in an uncapped game for the World Cup against Japan. So I was starting in the second row, and then this was when I was 17. So it was, yeah, I was quite young. It was my first senior game. And then I think like my training load had been really high compared to where it had been. But at that point, I didn't really feel the effects of it because I was just young and just train every day. It's fine. But in hindsight, bad idea. So it like came out of the line 5 or so minutes in, and it's pretty identical to my most recent ACL. But as I came out of the line, someone stepped back inside me, and I just went to turn, and my knee just went like that. And I screamed, but not out of pain. It was more of like, oh crap, what have I done? And then they told me basically I just dislocated my knee. And then 4 days later, I had a scan. And they told me, and this was at the time where like an ACL injury was pretty much 12 months out minimum. That's what they told you. So I had a phone call to say, you've ruptured your ACL, you're out for 12 months. And this was a month out from Youth Commonwealth Games in the Bahamas as well. I was meant to captain that side. So, yeah. So it was, I was actually heartbroken. Like, I just remember being on the phone, breaking down in tears, ringing my dad. My dad, like, he was heartbroken. Like, I was at the Vale, so I just like sat on the side and I was just like crying my eyes out. Couldn't comprehend. Like, how do you comprehend that? Like, when you're that young, like, it was hard enough for me to deal with at 23, let alone 17. So yeah, again, that's probably a time in my life where I've blocked out a lot of the emotion and the feeling around it. But from what I can remember, I was pretty, like, I bounced back pretty well from the initial injury. Was fortunate enough that my dad took me out to the Bahamas to watch the girls. So it was one of those, like, right, at least I'm there. I'm not getting the FOMO of not being there.
Yeah, bittersweet in many ways.
Yeah, it was. Do you know what? It actually was quite psychologically difficult to be there. But at the same time, they were my best friends. So I wanted to be there and celebrate everything they were doing at the same time. And I got a nice tan while I was there as well. So then I came back, had my surgery like a couple of days later. And the comparison between that ACL rehab, this ACL rehab, is just worlds apart. Like, I pretty much didn't see a physio consistently for the first 6 weeks. I was in the Welsh setup, but I was on the fringes of the Welsh setup. It wasn't like, obviously now we're contracted. It was nothing like that. And yeah, my rehab was fairly inconsistent, and it was mentally difficult. Like, I have these like flashbacks coming back up, you know, like you have memories come up on your phone, and it's like pictures of me at like 4 months post-op where I'm just like crying. And I think I just remember like taking pictures of myself then to be like, to look back on. And it was just like, I was just a little bit helpless, and like didn't have the resources, didn't have the support system that I have now. And yeah, it was a pretty tricky time. There was a lot more setbacks in that rehab than there has been in this one.
So essentially at 17, you've had a major injury. You've got the first taste of what representing your country looks like. You've had that taken away. You've had the captaincy at the Youth Games taken away. And of course, you've got the support of your family, but you haven't really got that much support from the union or anyone else. There's ad hoc programs.
Yeah.
And you're 17.
Yeah.
It's a pretty remarkable position to be in, isn't it? And yet the way you talk about it now is just, it's quite matter of fact. I guess that you had to do that, I guess.
Yeah, it was, there was like, you know, I see it a lot more clearly now where you say like, what can you control? What, like, you have to look at things from a positive lens, and like, go about things in the sense of like what you can do rather than what you can't. But at that time, I was probably doing that to a certain extent without realizing it, but it was a lot more up and down. And I had to be a lot more conscious about, like, I would be in a bit of a hole and then I'd be like, right, okay, can't get on with it. And then the next day I might be like, oh, I hate this. This is crap. Like, I hate being injured. And I, like, I've looked back on my Instagram and I put a post like, set like 71 days since I last played rugby, can't wait to play again. But whereas now I'm just like, well, I'm just enjoying my rehab. I'm enjoying, like, and I think I mentioned in a conversation the other day, it was like, I was out for 11 months with my other ACL. And if I look back, I pretty much wasted 11 months of my life, like just constantly being like, I can't wait to be back again. And there was like, great things that happened in my life during that 11 months, but I didn't really appreciate them for what they were because it wasn't playing rugby. I was like, well, I'll be
happy. That's interesting.
Yeah. Like I was really like, I'll be happy when I'm back on the field. And that's all I cared about. And externally, people might view that as like, right, she's dedicated, she's motivated to come back. But actually what it meant was that I was pretty miserable for those 11 months because I wasn't celebrating every little win because I was like, right, well, it's not playing rugby, so it's not good enough. And yeah, it's only in hindsight now that I can actually see that, but I don't actually remember anything about those 11 months because I'm like, I just pretty much did, like, I just wasted it away because I was just not in a good state of mind in terms of like, well, it's not good enough, I'm not playing rugby.
So what was it like then? So when you've come back, you've put the hard yards in, and you've had to be so self-motivated to get yourself into a position to be playing at that level again. What was it like getting your boots back on and hitting the field again?
Yeah, it was nerve-wracking, but I went and did my return to play, as far as we speak about in terms of new environments as well. I went to play with a social sevens team in Amsterdam Sevens at the age of 18. So I was just like, I had this opportunity. Someone messaged me, do you want to come and play? I was like, well, it is my return to play date, so like, why not? I was training with the Welsh Sevens senior setup at that time. I'd done my return to contact and everything like that. I said, look, I've got this opportunity to go and play. How do you feel about it? Yeah, happy days. So they just signed me off to go. That would never happen now, but they just signed me off to go. And I played 6 games of sevens every minute in one weekend. And that's not how return to play is meant to go, by the way. Like 20 minutes, 1 week, 40. Then. But yeah, I just played every minute, survived. It was like very nerve-wracking. But I think because everyone around me either didn't know me or didn't know about my injury, I know, like, everyone's watching me being like, oh God, she's just come back from an ACL, which would be right. I didn't tell anyone. I just rocked up, cracked on. And then as soon as I made a first tackle, I just completely forgot that I'd had any injury. So that was happy days, ticked the box, had a good time. And then
that goes back to similar. You're able to express yourself and yeah. Back to when you started playing, you know, you went into the rugby side and no one knew you.
Yeah.
So mirrored there. Yeah. Yeah. You're enjoying yourself. Yeah. That's really interesting.
That's pressure for sure. So I did that and then went back into the Ospreys senior setup. And then that was in the June, I did my return to play. And then in the November that year, that's when I got my first cap for Wales, which was, it was pretty emotional. Again, kind of like, I just remember it was a 7 p.m. kickoff, so like you just, the whole day I was just like, can we just play already, please? Because
yeah,
and yeah, it was pretty bit of a whirlwind, to be honest. Like, played a full game, and like everyone always says, like, what was your first cap like? And I was like, I can't actually remember a huge amount, to be honest, because it was just you're not fully there because it's just like a bit surreal. But it was pretty emotional because like when I was getting my cap presented after the game and stuff, like the head coach at the time was Roland Phillips and he was like, I've seen the dedication of this player to come back from an ACL. And then when someone puts it to you like that, you're like, oh, I actually have worked quite hard. But
it
was a bit of a full circle moment, really. So
it's incredible. It is incredible. And not that you ever want it to happen the second time so you can learn from the experiences the first time. But sadly, that's the position you're now in, although quite a long way down the journey, which is exciting. So again, just give us a flavour of how did it happen the second time? But then you've touched on it already, that that mindset shift was already in place to build back better, so to speak.
Yeah, so it kind of all started when I did my ankle back in December last year. So we came back from Rugby World Cup, so like I was a bit on cloud nine coming back from that. And then 3 games into the season, I broke my fibula and like displaced my foot. So I needed surgery pretty urgently to put that back into place. And that was like a whole, like that was whirlwind, because I went from being like fully fit, played like 50 odd minutes, and then snapped my ankle, and then I'm just in a hospital bed, like had surgery. It was a bit weird, but and that put me in, I was like, I'm gonna try and be positive about this. Like, what I started making like TikToks, daily TikToks to try and like distract me and that kind of thing. And then after a week or so, realizing the loss of independence, not being able to drive myself, not being able to cook for myself, all of those kinds of things, like that's a big part of my identity. So I really, really struggled with that. And I rely a lot on being productive and feeling like I've got something to show for my time and for my effort. But being sat on the sofa all day, even though that's part of recovery, like that wasn't very good for my mental health, because it was feeding into this narrative of like, oh, well, you're a bit useless. You've lost, you can't do this for yourself. Can't do that stuff. And then adding on to that, I was just sat there doing nothing all day. It was over Christmas, so it was like cold, miserable. Like I was just not in the best way. And then when I could start to like walk again and stuff, I started really appreciating that. I was like, oh my gosh, like I am never going to take walking for granted again. And then that's where things started to flip in terms of mindset, where I was like, there's a lot that I can do. There's a lot that I can't do. Like I can't run and I can't really walk properly, but I can try and walk properly and I can do my little banded ankle exercises. And I couldn't do that when I was in a cast. So it was just kind of changing the narrative around what are you comparing it to? Because if I was comparing forward and I was thinking, well, if I was fully fit, I'd be able to run around. Well, actually a week ago I was in a cast and I couldn't even move my foot. So I'm doing better than I was then. That's the way I started to view it. And I actually think that plays a huge role in accelerating someone's rehab. Like it's probably something that isn't spoken about enough. But if you're confident in what you're doing and you actually enjoy what you're doing, your visions and your attitude starts to line up more towards that, which is going to make you put more into it, and then that will make you get better quicker. And like I'm quite a big believer in that, especially now looking back like 10 months of rehab essentially. Like I actually think that's been something that's accelerated my rehab a lot. So basically I fast forward to Six Nations, managed to get back into training about two weeks or so before the first Six Nations game, put myself up for selection, got selected to start. And then you can imagine the hype around it was building, and I was building myself as well. I had to speak to the sports psych a fair bit because I was like, I'm really worried about re-injuring my ankle, because it all felt so fresh still. Like it'd been like 3 months. And he was like, think of all the examples and the times in training where you've not hurt your ankle. You'll be okay kind of thing. And I was like, yeah, all good. I was sweet, psychologically all good. And I was just like really excited to play. And then probably too excited. So then we came out onto the pitch, and then it's very similar to scenario to my other ACL. I literally just came out the line, play a step back inside me, and my foot was essentially planted the wrong way. Like I wasn't changing direction properly. And then my other knee just went. And what was different this time was that I knew exactly how rupturing an ACL felt. And I was like, I've done this before. And this isn't. And the physios were saying to me, just stay calm, it's fine. And they were like doing the knee test. And I was like, look, like literally on the pitch, I was like, look, don't do the knee test, because I'm telling you I've done my ACL. And
I'm experienced in this now, let me tell you.
The thing is that when I did my ACL before, they tested it and they said, it's not your ACL. And I was like, don't tell me that again, because if it is, what it is, then I ain't living with that. So I just thought, don't tell me what it is. But then I started having this like spiral of doubt where I was like, I can't do this again. I can't go through the rehab again, because I had that light at the end of the tunnel, which was the Six Nations. And that had literally got me through my rehab. And it was that like looking forward to playing again. And then bam, within six minutes, it was gone, knowing that it was gone for a significant amount of time again. And then people kept saying to me, like, try and stay positive, it might be fine. And I was like, I'm just waiting for the scan to tell me exactly what I already know. Just to the extent of the damage was the question. And then had a scan. Well, actually, we should probably talk about like the mental state that I was in after that. It was like very much denial, very much shock. I just kept like, I hate playing the victim. And like, I really, really don't like getting stuck into that spiral. But I was like, just sat on my bed and everyone had like left my room and stuff. And I was just like, I just remember falling back on my bed and she'd be like, I can't believe this has happened. Like, you couldn't write it. And there's, don't know, many words in the world, but I was just like, you couldn't write that, you know?
And that's not a victim thing, is it? That's just, fucking hell. Come on.
Yeah. But for me, it was having that cutoff point of like, when I find out what I've done and I have a plan and I have a surgery date, then we can park it, we can move on. Cause it's just the unknown. Like, no one likes the unknown. And then when I did find out what I'd done, it was, you know, I sort of bounced back up a bit. Then I concentrated on helping the team throughout the rest of their station stuff. I basically was like a limpet. I followed them around to all the away games and stuff. Cause again, it was similar to my first ACL. Like, I just wanted to be involved, wanted to be with my friends. And then had my surgery just after the Six Nations finished, and for about a week or two kind of fell back into a bit of a like a negative mindset, where again it was just the same as my ankle. It was like, you've lost your you know, ability to do things for yourself, you've lost your independence. Like, half of my brain was telling me, right, just enjoy this time, relax. Like, ACL rehab's hard, so you may as well prep yourself for it by relaxing. The other half of my brain was like, well, there's so many things you could be doing in this time. You could be reading a book, you could be doing your online coaching, you could be doing this, that, you know? And it was just like, it was like bloody battle of Hastings up there, like fighting each other. It's the best way I can use to describe it. Honestly, it's the only way I can use to describe it. It's just like conflicting thoughts going on in my head, and it was just like noise. And meanwhile, I'm just lying in bed in darkness, like, shut up, please. And it was like, yeah, I owe a lot to the sunshine coming out in May, because that helped me. Like, having something to get out of bed for in the morning, like just waking up, having writing myself a little bit of a to-do list, getting outside, sitting in the sun, doing a crossword, reading a book, like that kind of stuff, because that was good for my mind, good for my soul. Sunlight's really good for you. Like, that sort of helped me. And then since then, it's just been like a growing thing week on week. I've been trying to learn more through podcasts, through books, but because I've been, and what I found is reading books that really align with what I'm going through and give me something to actually apply it to, all of a sudden it's just helped my, I think the foundations were always there, but then it's just helped it to grow and grow and grow into sort of, I like, the best way I can describe it is, before I had to look at a situation and find the positives, whereas now I look at a situation in a positive light, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I get that. What were some of those books then? Talk us through those and the particular alignment. What drew you to them?
So The Obstacle is the Way was one of the first ones that I read.
Yeah.
And essentially it made me feel kind of like empowered and privileged to have an obstacle to work with. Like, rather than seeing it as like a, oh, I'm unfortunate to have gone through this. I'm like, well, not many, you know, out of however many rugby players there are in the world, how many of them go through back-to-back serious injuries? Like, only a handful. So I'm in a privileged position in that sense, because I could come out of this 10 times stronger than someone who hasn't been through that. And so that started to make me feel like I was almost in a better position than a lot of people, because I had the opportunity to grow and to see an obstacle as something that was put there as a way of allowing me to be a better person and a better athlete at the end of it. So that was one of them. Then I also read When the Clouds Come by Drew Povey. He came in to speak to us in Welsh camp. And it, again, it's like when you read a book and you're going through the things that they're talking about, or you can relate to what they're talking about, it is like game changing because like I actually get it, like, and I've got a bit of substance. And I was like making notes on the book and like not only making notes but then also applying it to scenarios that I was going through, and then also applying it to how I would use that if I was fully fit and like playing as well. So I was like trying to look forward in that sense. I also read a book called Reasons to Be Alive, I think it's called. And it gave me more of an insight into like what it actually feels like to be depressed and what that feels like. The author basically describes it in such a way that you can like completely immerse yourself in it and you feel it. But then also the book goes through ways of getting out of that. And then if you slip back into that mindset, how you can bounce back out of it. And it talks a lot about like, well, essentially at the end of the book, it's like reasons to be alive. And it's just a list of things that it's like that you can be grateful for, and that like the little things in life, the things to enjoy. And that started to make me be like, there's actually so many of them. And if I looked at it the same way as I looked at my first ACL, where I was like, I'll be happy when I play again in 9-10 months time, then I'm going to miss all the little things that are the reasons to enjoy life between now and then. And then basically I'm just having a good time every day. Do you know what I mean? It's not a case of playing. I want to play again. Don't get me wrong. I obviously want to play again, but it's like, I'm quite enjoying the journey to getting there, to be honest.
Yeah. So it sounds like it. Yeah. And it sounds like you've massively taken those experiences from the first time into the second time.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got a million questions. I won't, I promise, but I've got one, I guess. Would you consider yourself to be an inspiration?
I think if I was to have had someone similar to myself to look up to when I was younger, I think that would have been helpful for me. So I think I always try and look at it back. Fionn Lewis, one of the other girls I now co-host on my podcast, and one of my closest friends, she always says, be the person who you needed when you were younger. And I think that accidentally, that's exactly who I'm trying to be without even realizing it. But if I'd had someone like myself who was just kind of like pretty honest and open on social media about struggles that they've gone through, or that, you know, they're just being themselves and that's, it's okay to be yourself. Like, I think that would have been pretty powerful for me to see as a, you know, a 12, 13 year old, because all I had on social media was negative influences and people who were being fake, and that I was trying to be them. So I think, it's a hard one because I've been told on a few occasions, like, you're inspirational, or you're like, by young girls, even like, you're inspiring me to do X, Y, and Z, or, you know, to show me that there's a path in professional rugby. But it's like sometimes hard to just be like, oh, sweet. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's hard to just be like, oh, yeah. I don't know. It's a weird thing.
I think simply by the fact that you find it difficult, that contributes to you are, and you're doing it organically. And every single thing you've talked about, the constant curiosity, the intention with everything you do, the support for your friends, the selflessness in that as well, because that is really bloody hard, you know, to put yourself in that environment. But ultimately, it's the group of friends in that environment that you thrive in, that you want to be part of it. And to have that resilience again and again and again, to come back from injury, not just to come back from injury, but then to compete at the highest level again, you know, and that's the exciting thing. And I think my instinct is to kind of say, you know, young girls that are playing rugby, and I don't think it is girls, it's just young people, or it's people, actually. It's not even young, because I'm inspired by the stuff you're doing, and I know lots and lots of other people are as well. So it's very tricky to hear that. I know that. And it's very tricky. You're not going to go, yeah, get it, Simon. Yeah, totally. Yeah, always. But I think just know that. I think it's an unbelievable job what you're doing and how you're acting. And I really like that phrase that Fionn said, you know, be the person you need. And and I guess on that, you know, maybe a question is, what would you say to a 15-year-old Gwen, you know, pre-rugby now? What would you say to her if she was sitting in that kitchen with you?
Firstly, I would say, bulletproof your knees because you've got a bit of weakness there.
Yeah, don't play rugby. Whatever happens, don't do it.
I would probably say to just like never doubt yourself. Like people are always going to find a reason to pick on you or to have something to say about what you're doing, but never ever stop doing something just because someone else disagrees with it. Because there's always going to be a reason that people are going to, you know, pick on you. Or I put up a reel the other day from the podcast where it was like people are always going to find something. And the reality is, like, when I was like overweight as a kid, I got bullied for that. When I lost weight, I got bullied for being too skinny. So it was like, right, not really going to win here, am I? So to just try and block out that like external noise, and like I said previously, just concentrate on what you think and concentrate on growing your positive self-talk, because nothing anyone else says really now influences that a huge amount. Like I've just got like a bit of a wall up now, I suppose, where I'm just like, right, everyone's entitled to their own opinion, but it doesn't affect the way I see myself because I've got evidence that you're not correct, you know? So I would just kind of emphasize that point, I think. Yeah.
Definitely. No, I that resonates with me as well as a young kid. So I totally hear you on that. And kind of coupled with that, and you've mentioned it, that, you know, the second ACL, you really sought the sports psych help, and the self-awareness there is obviously something that you focus on every day. You're a very proud ambassador of Looseheads, the mental health charity as well. How did that come about?
Yeah, it was kind of like the timing of it was, it lined up pretty well because the conversations started coming in around the time where I did my ankle injury. And one, it gave me a bit of purpose alongside doing my rehab, where it was like, you know, I can concentrate on helping this charity grow. But also it aligned with my growing understanding of mental health and what it actually meant. Because for a long, long time, I just thought that mental health was like, you know, something that people, I thought mental health meant mental ill health. I didn't really understand the difference between the two. And it's only over the last, probably since I've been injured really, where I've started to educate myself a little bit more. But it's actually quite remarkable because a lot of my family have struggled with mental health over the years, but I didn't ever understand that. And now in hindsight, I'm like, I see it now and I understand it, but it blew my mind that for a long time, I didn't understand that that was happening. And I think that's probably now why I'm such a big advocate for the education side of mental health. And because realistically, there's however many people just like me that didn't even understand that we all had mental health, and that is something that can be good on one day and bad on another day, and good and bad within the same day. And it's just about learning how we deal with that ourselves, but also how we can spot those signs in other people. And then the hardest bit then is knowing what to say, how to say it, how to come across in the right way. Like it's just a minefield. And I just think charities like Looseheads are doing such an important job and are playing a huge role in growing that, especially across a sport like rugby, which is traditionally, you know, a macho sport where you just like, you're literally told to be aggressive, told to like toughen up on the pitch, like have this mindset where it's like you won't stop. But then when you come off the pitch, it's about learning how to flip that and to switch that off and actually creating an open, like safe space to be able to talk about that. Because without a happy mind and without a mind that's at ease, you're not going to be able to perform on the pitch anyway. So it's about linking those two up.
Definitely. Oh, here. And again, all roads lead back to that environment. Words, yeah. Isn't it? And that concept of, yes, you can go and beat each other up on the pitch, but there's that time to be invulnerable. Yeah. Embrace the vulnerability, and that's only going to help you and serve you better when you get out there and play the sport. So no, it's incredible work what you're doing, and the team over there are doing a brilliant job, and long may it continue. I think that's that's the thing. Coming towards the end, I've got, there's one or two questions left. There's one really important one I haven't asked you before we get into the final one, really. Have you got a return to play date for this ACL? And let's hope it's the last ACL injury.
Yes, I am hopefully going to be returning to play at the start of February. And great. I've not really be, like said that publicly or anywhere for the majority of my rehab because it's always been like the anticipated return to play. But if I'm quite frankly honest with you, like I'm not hugely bothered on the date that I return to play because for me, I'm going to be hopefully back full training for at least a month and a half before I play. And for me, that's far more important than playing an actual game because that'll come in time. But for me, it's a case of getting back to training fully and then training for long enough that psychologically, I know that I'm going into a game without any thoughts about re-injury because realistically speaking, the last two games I've played in, I've suffered injuries that required surgery and that is not easy to get over. Even now when I'm doing my return to change of direction, if I've not got a ball in my hand to distract me, I think there's something in my mind that's like, oh, watch your ACL. Because, you know, yeah. it's just that like fear. I mean, the way your body works is off of evidence. And if I've given my body evidence that I get injured when I play rugby, then obviously when I try and play rugby again, that's all that's going on in my head. So for me, it's far more important to make sure I'm right because I know that if I have any doubts in my mind, I'm not going to perform as well as I can. So I need to then just learn and to give myself the time for my body to build up that evidence that I'm not going to get injured when I play again. So for the time I play again, hopefully that's February. If it's, you know, end of February, it doesn't matter to me because it's far more important that I go into that game 100% because I don't just want to return like the same way I was. I want to return the best athlete I've ever been. And I want people to be like, shit, like, this is crazy. Like, what, you know, what's she been doing in a rehab? That's how I want to return realistically. So, yeah.
I think you're certainly going about it the right way from my very limited experience of any sort of rehab and elite sport. I think you're certainly on the right track there. So, again, fingers crossed. But again, like you said, look, right place, get there. What's another couple of weeks? You know, it's that's the most important thing. Mm-hmm. So the title of this podcast is Where's Your Clubhouse? Mm-hmm. And it can be anywhere you want it to be. It doesn't have to be physical bricks and mortar. It can be wherever the environment, we've talked about that a lot today, that environment is that you feel safe, comfortable, not judged, and just somewhere you can be yourself. So that is my question. Gwen Crabb, where is your clubhouse?
So I think when we've had this conversation before, I mentioned on the physio room and like as a bit of a joke, but like genuinely, because that's where I've spent a lot of time. And it's like being around people that are going through similar things or that just understand and are just there as like a bit of a shoulder to cry on or someone to like big you up. But I think probably in more recent, the last month or so, it's probably just being around. So there's a group of four of us at the minute with Wales that are rehabbing an ACL, and being around those girls, it just makes you feel like you're not alone. And it's pretty humbling because sometimes you can get very in your own head. Coming back to that, the word victim, which we mentioned before, it's like you can get a bit like, why me? Why me? That's easy enough to do when you're in a long-term injury phase. But when you're around other people and you're seeing how inspiring they are getting through their injury and how they're going about it, I think it all feeds into each other because you're like, I'm not alone. There's other people going through this and we're bouncing off each other to push ourselves forward. But equally, if one of us is struggling, they've got the other one or one of the other ones to rely on and be like, how did it feel when you were going through this phase? Or how did you feel mentally at this point in your rehab? And that just gives it's almost like a nice safety blanket. Like, and you just feel like you're in a nice little bubble and you're all pushing each other on no matter what. And it's like, so I'll mention Fionn. Like me and Fionn are only 2 weeks apart in our operation date. So she had her op 2 weeks after me, but she had quite a few she had more complications than me. She's had meniscus repair, all that kind of stuff, which has meant her rehab has been slower progressing. And I will always look at Fionn and just whatever I'm thinking, I'll just think shut up because Fionn's cracking on with it. And I always think, like, it must be hard if I was in Fionn's shoes and I had someone who had their op just 2 weeks before me and they were running and I'm not running, like, that would feel difficult for me. So I look at someone like Fionn and I think, you're incredible. Like, the resilience and the mental strength that you've got to show to be able to get through that. And that's not even to mention that she got diagnosed with endometriosis and had a surgery for that in between as well. And it's just like, things like that just inspire me so much, because I think no matter what, whether it be in this ACL situation or just in general life, there's always someone who's worse off. And I think having that bigger picture just kind of brings you back down to earth a little bit. And it's like, right, you just concentrate on what you can do, because there's always someone worse off and they're kind of getting through it anyway as well.
But it's, there's a lot there, isn't there? But I think that totally makes sense, that almost that environment within an environment. Mm-hmm. And you've got like-minded people there, and that natural empathy that you show as well for one of your best pals who's in a very similar scenario. It's not going the same way, and she's had other complications as well that she's got to deal with. And all you're doing there is shining a light on how incredible she is. And that's another, I think, shining example of that mentality that you've got, and that why you will be successful when you return, and also why people will be inspired by your actions as well. So I think that's something to definitely reflect on, hopefully. And it's not easy. They're not easy, but that's, as a clubhouse, I totally get that. And I think that is a really lovely way to look at it.
Yeah,
you mentioned Fionn. Sorry, go on.
I think, like, to summarize it would be like being in a group of people who are understanding and accepting of who you are, and they don't try and change you at all. They actually appreciate you and support you because of that. I think that it's hard because that can change, and realistically throughout your life that does change. But I think that is probably what makes a clubhouse, is that you're around people who love you because of the way you are.
Can I put that on a t-shirt?
Yeah. As long as you give me some of the commission.
Yeah, it's just spot on. And I think, that's an incredible way to look at it. And I couldn't agree more. I think just to wrap up, you've mentioned Fionn there. Tell us about this little project that you two have got going. By the time this episode goes out, yours will already be up and running. So yeah, just tell us a little bit about what you guys have been up to.
Yeah, so essentially, throughout our rehab, me and Fionn have become closer, obviously, like I mentioned, going through the same kind of thing. And she came to me with an idea about nearly 2 months ago now. And she just said, look, I've had this idea. Like, how would you feel about maybe doing a podcast? And like, I'd been thinking, I had a lot of feedback from reels I'd been sharing, or people messaging me like, thank you, this has helped me so much. And I was like, there's got to be a way that I can reach more people and that can help more people. And basically Fionn came to me this idea, and I was literally like, yes, that's it. That's the idea that. And she came, she said, look, I want the name of it to be Say It How It Is, because that's exactly what I do. That's what Fionn does. And I was like, yeah, love it. I'm in. And then from that moment on, she knew she was the boss. And I was just like, but we worked really, really hard on it. We thought, you know, you don't ask, you don't get. So we messaged Vodafone, see if they wanted to sponsor us. And they did. So that was pretty crazy. And from there, it's kind of just gone 100 mile an hour. We've not left any stone unturned, really. We've just been trying to cover all bases. We got a studio, we got a producer, we got the lot, because we felt like the conversations that we were going to be having, the premise around the podcast was having conversations with people who are successful or who are high performers in their field. It doesn't really matter whether that's sport or not, but to show that everyone goes through struggles, everyone goes through setbacks, and you can actually, you know, like what the obstacle is the way it taught me, you can actually use that to propel yourself to success, and ultimately that your everyday person, no matter what you're going through, you're not alone, and there is actually people at the top of their game that have gone through similar things. So because of the level of conversation that we wanted to be having, we wanted those stories to get out there in a way that's going to catch people's attention. So that's why we just tried to leave no stone unturned, and we just went full throttle. Our first episode is launching on the 22nd, which, like I said, will probably be, well, yeah, be before this comes out. So that's exciting.
Yeah. It sounds exactly what people will be up for. It's relatable. People will totally resonate with the topic. So, I mean, it goes without saying, just the very best of luck to you both. And where can people get it? Usual places?
Yeah, everywhere. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts. We're going to be putting them out on YouTube as well. So, yeah, all of the normal podcast platforms.
Amazing. Say it how it is. Brilliant. Yeah. Gwen, thank you so much for your time. I've really, really enjoyed that. I've been making a few notes as we've been chatting as well. So just thank you so much for your time and all the very, very best with your recovery and return to play.
No worries. Thanks for having me. I've enjoyed it.
We really hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as we did. We certainly took a lot away from it, and it's important to us to hear your feedback. Let us know what you think. Please leave a review, leave us a rating, and it would mean an awful lot to us to hear your feedback. Please stick with us. We look forward to welcoming you soon back into the clubhouse. And it's really exciting, some of the guests we've got coming up for the rest of the series. So I'll leave you with one question. I'm sure you can guess what it is. And that one question is, where is your clubhouse? See you soon.